The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Well, not the afternoon many of us had in mind at Arsenal, but many of our worst fears were realised as Manchester City were humbled by 5-1. There is at least one consolation. Listen to this from last week's show. Do you want to create history, revise your prediction?
Yeah, we're going to lose 6-1.
No, let's not go mad. The good news there is that I was right, and the bad news is that I was very, very close to being wrong. After a few days to digest the events of Sunday's defeat, we'll get into why it played out the way it did, whether City can stop that from happening again, and all the details of the aftermath of the game. Coming up, it's a trip to Leighton Orient in the FA Cup. Are there nerves of a giant killing, or is this the light after the darkness at the Emirates? And then Real Madrid are back for their annual visit to the Etihad in the Champions League, but City are clearly less prepared than they've been in previous years. We'll preview both of those matches and hear from fans of both sides too. I'm one of two David Moonies that will be appearing on today's show. More on that later. But first, here's City fan Richard Burns.
Hello, David.
And from One Football, Dan Burke.
Hello. How's it going?
I mean, we've had better weeks, I think it's fair to say. I think this is a podcast of licking wounds. But before we get to that, I don't know if you saw this week, but the former City player Jim Whitley was in Coronation Street. He was playing a physician. I just wondered if either of you two have ever been on TV, not in a kind of like fan interviewed on like Match of the Day sort of role. But any cameos? Dan, you strike me as someone who might have had a cameo in something daft.
No, I haven't actually. I mean, you've taken the wind out of my sails with the not a fan being interviewed on TV thing. Because I was going to say famously, but it wasn't. The whole point of it was it made nobody famous, was it? But Richard and I were on TV together a few years ago on a cable channel called Fan TV, which is sadly no longer with us. I can't think why, but yeah, that was an experience, wasn't it, Richard?
It was, yeah. You had the joy of going to the studio and sitting in the green room, I believe, whereas I was online as a giant floating head that by more than one person was compared to. And I'm going to date this, I'm afraid, but was compared to Zordon from the from the original Power Rangers, which is it was an uncanny resemblance, unfortunately.
When they got your names mixed up?
Yes, that's right. Yep, and I was at home with them, desperately trying to get me to put on a City shirt and wear a City scarf. Like I'm sat at my dining table. Nobody's going to believe that this is how I dress.
Yeah, and Dan, you were paid in crisps, if I remember right.
Correct. Yeah, so I was asked if I would go down to do this thing. It was back when we used to do Typical City, and they wanted some fans to go for this like cable channel where the premise was they'd get fans on to like chat as if they were in the pub with their mates. What a revolutionary concept that was. And the presenter was Chris Tarrant's son, Toby. Nice guy, to be fair. And I kind of said to him, oh, will there be like travel expenses or whatever? They were like, no, sorry, but there will be food there when you get there and stuff. I was like, all right, fair enough. There was a bowl of crisps in the green room. So, yeah.
They didn't lie.
Yeah, true. There was, yeah. And they were nice crisps as well, to be fair. They were McCoy's. So.
McCoy's. Like, no Tyrrells, though, is it?
Not really, no. I don't think the budget could stretch quite that far. Toby Tarrant probably took up most of that budget. So,
yeah, excellent stuff. Richard, I notice you're sat at your dining table now, but not wearing a City scarf. What's this all about?
Well, if you were filming me, we are on camera, but you've assured me that you don't record. So, I'm not in a City scarf today. I'm in black. I'm still in mourning for the Arsenal result.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that. Where to start, really? It's tricky to know how bad it was because there were good bits in there, despite the result. But also, Dan, there's been plenty of rock bottom moments this season already. All I've got to do is say United, Feyenoord, Tottenham, Sporting. Like there's now Arsenal is just added to that list. Where are City? Where does this one rank? What's going on?
I mean, when I was talking to you guys after the game the other day, I used a phrase which I'll repeat here. And you know, it feels like after many glorious years of where our sort of wildest dreams come true to the point where we just pissed off the everyone else, basically the rest of the league, you know, sick to death of City winning stuff. And this season has felt kind of like a kind of nationwide humble pie tasting tour where we've just gone from town to town eating humble pie of various shapes and sizes and flavours, all of which has tasted like complete shit, basically. And it's just been horrible, hasn't it? And we've, you know, one of the things that we've not seen over the years with City, we've seen a lot of defeats and, you know, bad results over the years. We've not quite seen quite as many sort of batterings as we have this season. And that's what's been so upsetting about it, really. The fall off has been quite massive and quite drastic. And you kind of think, well, was it avoidable? I mean, I think it probably was avoidable in sort of planning terms. You know, the fact that they went into another season without refreshing the squad and didn't have a proper backup for Rodri and have paid the price for that. But I kind of think, is it avoidable in the moment as well? Like, is there something we can do to just be a bit more rigid as a team to make these defeats not so severe, to shut up shop when we go 3-1 down and just see a game out? You know, when Arsenal went 3-1 up the other day, it's like, all right, well, the game's dead now. Mm. Let's just sort of see this out for the last 20, 30 minutes or whatever it was. There was a point when I think it was Martinelli went through and Ortega made a save and you're thinking, oh God, don't let it be 4-1. And then it's 4-1. Then it's 5-1. You know, could have been 6-1. You know, and this is what is kind of upsetting and embarrassing about the form this season. It's not so much the defeat, it's the manner of the defeats.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, Richard, it's hard to judge as well because, like, you take those other games in there that I mentioned, like Feyenoord, for instance. They were good for a large portion of that game. Didn't start great, got themselves 3-0 up and then threw it all away. United, they were awful for that game. And I've never seen a game sum up more that both teams deserve to lose. And that United game was just a terrible one. Tottenham, they were awful throughout. Sporting, they started really well and then fell off a cliff and were bad again. This Arsenal one, they started badly with that early mistake. They give away another mistake in there. But then, up until the equaliser, you can make a case for them being on top of that game. So, like, why does it suddenly end up 5-1 when City have been so not in control of the game, but like a force in it?
I mean, I think there's so many different things that factor in. So I think, like, the first point, and by no means is this to excuse make or anything, but I think, like, the first point of how City end up so quickly 2-1 behind after getting a much deserved equaliser at Arsenal is Arsenal get a huge slice of luck. Part of that luck is City shooting themselves in the foot with Foden's really bad pass that, I mean, it's just straight to Thomas Partey. But then there's an enormous amount of luck in the way the ball ends up in the net. And that can happen. So, like I said, it's not to excuse make. That happens in a game. City have had plenty of their slices of luck over the years. But it's like from there, having worked so hard to establish, I mean, I was going to say a foothold, but it's more than a foothold in that game. I would agree that I think City were, between the first goal and the equaliser, I think City were the better team and had a really good element of control and really imposed themselves in a difficult situation. And then it's like they're just so fragile now that everything falls apart from there. Mm. I think you've also got in the added element that Arsenal, you know, Arsenal go into that game knowing that City are fragile. Arsenal go into that game, like, City don't exist in a vacuum. Their mistakes don't exist in a vacuum. They have to be playing against a team that can capitalise on that. And obviously plenty of teams are doing so this season. But Arsenal are a particularly good team. They are an outside bet at the moment because of Liverpool. They're an outside bet for the title. Like, they're still trying to cling on to those coattails. And so I think, like, the crowd was up. Like, obviously Arsenal, there's a rivalry there now, or something of a rivalry between Arsenal and City. So the crowd are up, they're really urging Arsenal on, and I think in a way that we're just not really used to, and that probably, I don't think, explains any of the other results. I think there's an element of City just crumbling in that environment a little bit, and Arsenal mm-hmm. being buoyed by it, and City not really being ready to face it. I mean, factor that in, you know, the demons of this season just coming back. It's like everything just sort of folds into one absolute nightmare that happens again and again. Yeah,
again.
It's like it just almost like wills the ball into the net for Arsenal. It's but you know, within that, like, City tactically, I don't think are there. Like, they, like you said, they're not doing enough to shut up shop. It doesn't seem to be part of their intention. You've got players, very very good players, who individually go off the boil. Obviously, we've seen Foden. He'd be really good recently, but in that game, I thought he was fairly anonymous and then makes a mistake that does lead to the goal, that you know, essentially what becomes the winning goal. There's just individuals and as a team, it's just not there, is it? which is a very simplistic thing to say, but
the mistakes, Dan, the mistakes were really stark in this one as well, because I mean Akanji in the first couple of minutes, like it's such a weak moment from him. And I mean, he has his critics, but I think he's quite good. I quite like Akanji in those positions. I think I like the way he accepts the pressure like that, and normally he's better than that. Richard's mentioned Foden for the second goal. For 3-1, Ortega should probably stop it. He gets a good hand on it. I think he's a bit unlucky, but he's unlucky with the bounce of it, but he should keep it out.
Yeah.
It feels like they can't go a week at the moment without somebody making a massive rick.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably an extreme example of recency bias, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because, you know, God knows we've watched some shite City teams over the years. But I can't remember a City team that made quite as many sort of unforced errors as this one. And perhaps it's a case of them just being so good. You know, we're used to them being so good, and right now they're being so bad, and you kind of notice it a little bit more.
Even in the 90s when things were really bad, at least they were the other team were better than them. They weren't just
exactly
making mistakes.
This is it. Yeah. We're sort of beating ourselves in these games. It feels like we're starting games 1-0 down, which has been the case, you know, the last couple of league games, and you could almost make the case for the Bruges game being the same as well. And it's just when you're in bad form, it's just a horrible way to start a game. And I don't really blame Akanji for that mistake that much. I don't think he's had a great season. I think he's played through fitness issues and been, you know, a real sort of stalwart for us when we've needed players there. I think they look a little bit more composed defensively now that Stones is back. You could argue Stones put him under a bit of pressure with that pass, but at the same time, I think you've got
they're
to be
City,
able to
they're
accept
City
that.
They're used to those passes. Yeah, exactly.
So you just hope that they kind of start putting these mistakes behind them in the coming weeks and just at least have a first 10, 15 minutes to settle into the game. Because after that point, I mean, obviously there was almost that mistake that Ortega made when he passed it out to Kovacic that could have been a real blunder.
I think what's worse about that one is, like, in that position there, it's probably, like, if you ask Guardiola, it's probably the right pass for them to make in that situation for what he wants his team to do. But Ortega plays it short, and Kovacic doesn't look like he wants it. Yeah. And it's like, when you're in that position, it's like you're forcing players to do things that they just don't want to do at the moment.
Yeah, and that's why I've been kind of thinking to myself this season, well, how much of this is Pep to blame for, really? How much of it, you know, if the players are going out there and perhaps not following his game plan, which was what he said in the last half an hour of this game, and making these silly mistakes, how much can he really be held responsible for that? Perhaps not so much, and, you know, perhaps that's just something that they need to iron out as players. They need to solve those problems as players on the pitch. But at the same time, it kind of feels like we're going into games and kind of making things difficult for ourselves tactically sometimes with the way the midfield is and the way that we're getting overwhelmed in midfield every single game and not really seeming to do much about it, which is a little bit frustrating from Pep's point of view. And I feel like, as much as I love the guy and as much as I think he's done an amazing, amazing job for City over the years, it's at the point now where this season's becoming a bit of a black mark against his career. You know, with these bad results, like, you can't just sort of excuse it as, oh, well, Rodri got injured, what are we supposed to do? It's like, no, come on, we've got to find a solution for this, really. We can't just go into games with our defensive tactic being, let's hope they don't score, because that's what it is at the moment, isn't it? And they are scoring, so it's a problem.
I mean, the one kind of little pushback I'd have on that is if the overall plan for next season and the season beyond that for the remainder of his contract is to play very much in the way that they've been playing in the last few years, but if that setup isn't working this season, is there any point to scrapping it all, starting again for something this season and then scrapping all that again for the start of next season? Is it not better to kind of stick to close to what the plan would be, do as best you can and then rebuild it for next year?
Yes, possibly. I mean, if it comes at the expense of us not getting in the Champions League, you would say that's a huge gamble that hasn't paid off there, wouldn't you, I guess? But if we sort of look at this season as a bit of a write-off, which it almost certainly looking like it will be, you know, we're not going to win the league, obviously. I very much doubt we'll win the Champions League. And then we just try and get to next season and start again, hope that Rodri comes back afresh, hope that Nico Gonzalez is going to be able to adapt quickly and be, if not like Rodri, then at least someone who can sort of fill that gap and then play alongside Rodri next season, then maybe it doesn't make sense to go wholesale changes. I just think something like, I don't know, dropping playing two defensive midfielders together or something like that. I'm no tactical genius, but just something that will make us a little bit more solid and stop us getting overwhelmed in these games would be the way to go for me. But I'm not Pep Guardiola. He knows a hell of a lot more about football than I do.
Just to kind of reflect that from a fan point of view, Richard, as well, is I'm playing devil's advocate here now because I'm going to push back on my own pushback. But the idea that Guardiola should shake it up and do something new. I mean, if you're one of those fans walking out of the Emirates on Sunday, you kind of like it's the latest in a string of times you've been leaving the stadium feeling utterly dejected and embarrassed by what you've just seen. Like there's an element of you've got to do something different for the fans here. You've got to make them feel better.
This is exactly what I was thinking as you sort of made that initial like pushback to Dan. That I think we all know what Pep has done for City, and I think most fans, like if you come away from the sort of like online discourse, most supporters are still. Like whatever generation and whatever like your experience of success being a City fan is, most people do understand that it can't be permanent. Like you can't actually win the league every year. You can't win every game. And at some point, you are going to take a proper beating because we're against good teams. And most people, like outside of the, like once you're outside of the stadium, I think most people are able to rationalise that. But I also think like there comes a point where there is a responsibility to people that are paying to watch you. Like there's a divide between just wanting results and just wanting to be entertained. And there's a reality like somewhere in the middle where you can still try and play football that entertains people that also minimizes the risk of losing or, you know, taking it.
I've just realized, are we having the Postecoglou debate?
I mean, I suppose it is like is it scaled up or scaled down? I suppose it's scaled up in terms of...
Scaled somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, it's scaled up in terms of the success that we've actually seen by a manager sticking to his principles, and it's scaled down in terms of, I guess, like the severity of one bad season set against all of that success that we've had. But I just think, yeah, like you can't go into every game doing the same thing, and I know it's more nuanced than that. I know it's not exactly the same thing every game, or there's a plan for each opponent, but generally the problems that we're seeing are the same problems or a version of the same problems over and over again. And yeah, I wasn't at the Emirates. I think I didn't enjoy watching it on TV. I think I'd have enjoyed it far less being surrounded by the Arsenal fans and walking back to a train or a coach or the car or whatever and having that long journey home. It's you do have to try and provide people with something, and you know, you all know that you pay your money, you doesn't mean that you're going to watch a winning team, but I think like it's about what's par for the course. And watching City at the moment, the sort of what they're delivering isn't par for the course with the resources that they have. It's the sort of less than the sum of the parts is probably the phrase I'm looking for, actually, not par for the course. It's, yeah, I think they do owe us a little bit more than they're delivering at this point.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer, statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Let's talk celebrations because obviously the counter side to that is while the City fans were dejected, the Arsenal fans were let's say mildly pleased about the result. That seems to kind of put it on the scale of where they were. Obviously, Stay Humble has been doing the rounds, and it's probably a good retort for this game, especially with the emphatic side of the scoreline. But Dan, I don't know about you, every single City defeat this season has been followed by Arsenal fans bursting through my front door, gasping and sweating, ready to scream, stay humble in my face. You know what I mean?
Have they really? I'd inform the police about that if I were you. That sounds... Well, they got a taste of humble pie themselves on Wednesday night, didn't they? So that didn't take long to come around. I mean, to be honest, and I think Richard and I are broadly on the same page on this.
Who's going to go first to forfeit the Burt points?
See, I'm a big believer in the chat shit, get banged philosophy. It's a rule that I live my life by, really. And I do think, you know, I would rather we did our talking on the pitch. And when Haaland said the stay humble thing back in September or whenever it was, I kind of thought, don't do that. Like, it's going to come back to bite you a little bit, that, you know. In the heat of the moment, I could understand why he did it, and I could understand the point that was made about it, because I think Arsenal fans have shown a lack of humility in the last week and, you know, in the last couple of years, really. But I just think, keep your mouth shut, play football, that's how we do it, and it's going to come back to haunt you. And I do not blame Arsenal fans for rubbing our noses in it at the weekend whatsoever. You know, you're allowed to have those little victories. Not everything has to be about winning the league. You know, it can't be like that, because if that was the case, only one team in the entire football pyramid would be having any fun. You know, and that's not what football's all about. But I do think at some point they probably do have to back up all this chat with something tangible, which they haven't done so far. And I will let you forfeit the Burr points now, Richard.
Yeah, so, I mean, I largely agree. I think where I probably differ slightly... Oh, no, it's not differ. I fully agree in principle, but I'd be lying if I said that I didn't absolutely love the Haaland behaviour following the 2-2 at the Etihad. Like, should he have said it? Is it, like, the right way or a professional way to behave? Probably not. But did I also enjoy watching the video over and over again of him clearly saying something and then saying, I wasn't talking, you clown? Like, that is funny to me. But in finding that funny, like, I also accept that at some point the shoe's going to be on the other foot. And I think, like, ultimately, football's about entertainment, right? And most people who watched that game on Sunday will have found something to be entertained by. And like Miles Lewis Skelly's celebration, when I saw him do it, my first reaction was to be irritated, because I knew exactly what he was doing. I've got the context and the background to understand why he's doing it. And it irritated me, but that's the point, isn't it? Like, it's, you've irritated us, so now we get the chance to do it back, because I hate to say it, but they are humbling City a little bit in that environment. It's, you are going to a team that has been your rival over the last couple of years and taking a proper ass kicking. And yeah, I agree with Dan, like, they've got every right to celebrate like that. It doesn't mean I like it. I didn't enjoy watching it. It didn't make me smile at the time. I'm not in a rush to go and watch the replays of it and watch it back and see if I enjoy it more a second time. Like, I won't. But like, that's part of the game, and as fans we give our you know, as long as you don't cross over a line, like there's elements of, I don't want to use the word abuse, but there's hostilities in a football game. There's things that in a football stadium where you do mock and rib opposing players, and like, you've got to be able to take that back. Like, they're human, and the same applies for Lewis Skelly, having taken the who are you comment from Haaland. He's allowed to give it back. So I don't like it, I didn't enjoy it, but it's, you just have to suck it up and move on, and hopefully next time we play them, you know, we get to give a bit back again, and that's fine.
But, like, Haaland also has a point at the Emirates, doesn't he? When he points at the gold badge on his sleeve and says, you'd love one of these, wouldn't you? I mean, because, like, there is still the wider picture of like, this has all come about off the back of this rivalry, which feels very, very unbalanced, in that City have won everything. Arsenal are still the upstarts and the challengers. That they're making a lot of noise. It's like, now go and back it up, do something.
But so I suppose, like, this may be, if I was an Arsenal fan, and I'm sure there won't be many Arsenal fans listening to this, but if I'm an Arsenal fan getting wind that a City podcast has dedicated five minutes or whatever to telling them what they need to back up or to, you know, to how they celebrated against us, then I'd probably see that as
I'm not owned.
Yeah, I think I'd be thinking, like, in this specific moment, they're more rattled than us, and I think that probably, like...
I'm not going to deny being rattled. That's the thing. No, I am genuinely rattled by it.
And that's fine. It's fine to own that as well, isn't it? But like that like is exactly the point. So in which case it served exactly its purpose. Arsenal fans can take that as as their success in this moment. It isn't a trophy. Yeah, Haaland's within his rights to then have a go back at the fans as well. I tend to think that if in the moment that you have lost, you're having to point to other successes, then like I'm not a huge fan of that. Like, because I just think you have just been beaten 5-1. And if I'm doing that, to, I don't know, what would an example be? A United player, and they make a 19 gesture or 20, whatever, 20, isn't it, that they've won the league. Like, in that moment, I don't care. Like, I'm enjoying that we've just won the derby, and nothing you can say is going to sort of rattle me back. So if I was an Arsenal fan, I probably would have enjoyed Haaland doing that, because I'd think, great, we've got you. You've felt the need to retaliate again. So I don't know, maybe I'm being too straight-laced about it, and you know, maybe I should be more angry about it, but I just kind of accept it, to be honest.
If you think back to when we were in United shadow, you know, we used to love beating them, didn't we? And we used to revel in it. Would you have accepted them turning around going, oh, but you've not won the league, have you? Like, that didn't take the fun out of it, the fact that we've not won the league. So you kind of have to think about it in those terms. And also, like it or not, we are in a rival with Arsenal now. I don't really want to be in one with them. I don't particularly care about it. I actually used to quite like Arsenal, especially when they were sort of competing with United for titles in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I really don't like them now, but mainly because they don't like us. And you just sort of have to respond in kind to that they really hate us. And like, that's, you know, some people have been saying in recent days that the Premier League's got its spice back as well, which is kind of... Okay, if that's good for the neutral, then whatever. I'd rather it hadn't, and you know, we were still just
the thing with this having its spice back is that it's all well and good. If it's City and Arsenal having a pop at each other, causing the spice to be back, then I mean, the City and Liverpool fans were doing plenty of that over the last kind of 5-6 years. So like, it's just as spicy. It's just different teams.
Well, I've not heard anyone say that City are boring to watch this season, which is quite a nice, makes a nice change, doesn't it?
It's probably because they're quite interesting to watch. Yeah, exactly. They keep getting battered, yeah. I mean, the Liverpool thing is another part of this, Dan, as well, because obviously, like, City have had those moments with Liverpool in the past, and they've now got these moments with Arsenal right now. And I kind of, I've seen a lot of people kind of suggesting that, it was never like this with Liverpool. Is that true? Like, because I seem to remember Liverpool fans, you know, throwing bricks and bottles at the City Bus. I seem to remember there being coins thrown at each sets of fans inside grounds. There's been horrible chants, all that sort of stuff. There's been plenty of animosity there.
Yeah, I'm not very on board with this sort of hands across the M62 stuff that seems to be happening at the moment either. Yeah, it's like the Liverpool rivalry. Well, they accused us of forcing a rivalry with them, didn't we? Which, you know, maybe was the case to some extent. And that was genuine hatred. And at the moment, they are, to me, the lesser of two evils, in that it's sort of, you know, we've had Liverpool win the league in recent years. It wasn't that bad. It's kind of, you know, we could kind of tolerate it. I think Arne Slot is quite boring. And, you know, now that Klopp's gone, it doesn't feel quite as intense. I think it's been quite a boring season overall, really, the fact that they've just sort of like been quite easily the best team in the league so far.
Taste of our own medicine.
a bit. And, you know, Arsenal win the league would be annoying because of the way that their fans would react to it and just how annoying their fans are. I'm sure Liverpool fans will show us how annoying they can be when they win the league later in the season. But at this moment in time, I hope that they do. And it will also sort of rattle United a little bit, won't it? Because they'll leak all their 20 titles. So there's that element of it as well. I remember the rivalry with Liverpool being very intense, and I think if we were in a title race with them this year, it would be very intense. But as things stand, we're on the outside looking in, and I don't care too much about who wins the league, but if I had a preference, it would just be about Liverpool, I think.
Yeah, and Liverpool, this is how bitter I am about all this Arsenal stuff, Richard. At least when City had their drop-off season in 2019-20, Liverpool got 99 points. They might have won it anyway. Arsenal are on track to get about 79, so it's just like, come on, lads. If you've waited for City to fold in a season, at least go on and win it yourselves.
That is the funny part about it, is that we've had this narrative of the last couple of years of nobody can compete with City, and now that sort of every team in the league, game by game, can compete with City, and five or six teams can feasibly finish above City. It is very, very funny that Arsenal could finally finish above us and be nowhere near the title. That is objectively funny. Yeah.
Can you name the only team in football history that's finished above Pep Guardiola but not won the title?
Oh, what a great question. Would that be Tottenham?
It's Tottenham. Yeah, 2017. They finished second behind Chelsea, and City finished third. There you go. Right, it's time to look ahead to hopefully some more positive things. We're going to start with something silly. Scoring 57 goals in 206 appearances, striker David Mooney made himself a club legend over two spells at Leighton Orient. When this weekend's FA Cup draw was made, I reached out to the O's press office to see if they could help set up a David Mooney Speaks to David Mooney interview. They and he said yes. I started with the first big question. Is he a David or a Dave?
Both.
You're both. Right, I see. Excellent. So, well, let's have you, David. I'll be David then, shall we? That probably makes it easier. I used to get followed a lot on social media by Leighton Orient fans.
I think I was saying it myself.
Well, I used to get followed a lot. And have you ever been followed by City fans thinking that you were me?
Probably. I don't go on there that much anymore, actually, to be fair. But when I used to, when I was playing, because I wasn't on it, and then Dane Cox, who used to play with us at Orient, was like, oh, you need to go on this, you need to go on it, you need to go on it, you know. So then I went on it, and it was funny because I think someone, I don't know, it was one of the girls in the house, or my wife, or someone, or my sister, or brother, or whoever, was searching up, and they were like, oh, there's another Dave Mooney who's involved in football, and they clicked into it, and that's when I actually seen you as well. And I was like, look at this fella stealing me thunder.
Yeah, I was going to say, were you annoyed that I had the handle? Because I was a Twitter OG. I signed up when I was like 18 at university. So like back in the day. Did you ever think about wanting that one?
No, because everybody called me Milnes. So that's why mine is like D Milnes. Do you know what I mean? But apart from that, it's funny, isn't it? And now we play each other.
Yeah,
my team against yours.
Yeah, I used to get Moons as well, but I get so like. Did you find it's a bad name for a nickname because you're just Mooney? You're nothing else. You're just Mooney when you're on the pitch.
Yeah, well, everybody. I don't know what it was. Everybody just called me Milnes from even back in Ireland when I was playing. Do you know what I mean? So it's always just stuck. And yeah, so when I was going through all the clubs and stuff in the UK, everybody was Milnes. Milnes, and then you meet other players and everybody knows you as that, so that's just how it goes down, you know.
Yeah. So let's talk about the game then. Yeah. Because obviously you've got quite the experience of Brisbane Road. What's it like to play at? What will City be getting when they go to Brisbane Road?
Do you know what? They'll actually love it, I think. Now, the only thing that might be is the pitch is probably a bit tighter maybe than what they're used to. But in terms of like the ground is lovely. Like it wouldn't be maybe state of the art modern, but in terms of the pitch, the way the stands are situated and stuff, the atmosphere will be cracking. Like they'll have it. It'll be a great game for people watching on the TV. Like because the fans there will be well up for it. The City fans will be up for it. Obviously, they're probably bringing a couple of thousand down. So, from that point of view, it'll be a really good game and a good spectacle on the TV, I think.
Yeah, and obviously, like a cup game like this, it's one of those occasions where, like lower league team at home, it kind of levels the playing field a bit, doesn't it? The atmosphere and everything around it. Do you sense like it'll be quite an occasion?
Yeah, and I was thinking then because I know they played Stockport on Saturday, and obviously they lost 1-0. I was thinking, you know, is part of the reason why they lost because of the game that's upcoming. You just, you know, you have that thing in your head where, you know, we're playing City the following week. Don't want to get injured. Even though they've been on an unbelievable run. Look, since probably November, I think they've been flying, Orient. So, which is good to see. But I just think it's going to be a really good game, man. And obviously, City have been a bit hit and miss. You don't know what team maybe Pep's going to play. Whether they're going to go full strength, or you know, maybe put a few fringe players in. But even the fringe players that can come in are world class. So. Look, it's going to be a difficult day for Orient, but hopefully they can give a good account of themselves.
Yeah, do you think they'll thrive as underdogs as well? Because obviously nobody's expecting Orient to knock City out of the cup, so it kind of takes the pressure off, does it?
Oh yeah, the pressure's well off. Like, so they'll just go and hopefully enjoy it, you know, and give a good account of themselves, and hopefully they can get a good result. If you're still in the game with 20 minutes to go, you'd nearly be sitting in hoping for extra time, you know, and try and drag it through that way, but look, it's going to be difficult, you know. They've got to start really well. That's going to be the main thing is how you start. They've got to try and leave a marker on City and let them know that they're in a game, and hopefully they can do that, because as I said, it's going to be a difficult game, isn't it? You know, yeah, I actually watched the match on Sunday, and it's funny because I thought for like the first 50 55 minutes. Until it went 1-1, I thought they were the better team. You know, and they probably could have gone for the jugular a bit. And then obviously the freak second goal, and then it just all just went and nosedived. But
can you see that sort of thing happening at the weekend? I mean, like if Orient get a bit of good fortune, can they then go, actually, we can build on this?
Yeah, look, you know what football's like. It doesn't matter who you are or what you are. Confidence is a massive thing. Obviously, Orient, I don't know the exact figures, but I know in the last 12 games, I think that was their first defeat on Saturday. So they're obviously brimming with confidence, you know, and City are a bit hit and miss. And look, if you can get stuck into them early, let them know that they're in a game and maybe nick a goal, who knows, like the crowd are going to be up for it. Obviously then do City's players start getting on each other's backs? Does the manager start throwing wobblers at half time? You know what football's like. You've seen it enough yourself. Like you just never know until you're in the situation. Like, but fingers crossed, like they can Orient can have a good start and make a right game of it, you know, because it will be a very enjoyable game, because as I said, the actual facilities and the way that, are you going down yourself?
I'm sadly not going to be there, no.
Yeah, no, it's class, man. It's just the way the stands are. Like they're kind of high tilted, and there's not much, like there wouldn't be much depth in the stand, but they're kind of like nearly horizontal or vertical. Like, do you know what I mean? They're straight up, so it just leads to a great atmosphere, and the noise will be banging around the place, and you know, there'll be people out. Have you seen it on the TV before, where they have in the corner of the grounds, they have like the apartment blocks?
Yeah.
So I'm sure they're probably selling tickets for this match as well. You know what I mean? Pay their mortgage or pay their rent off it. So look, it's going to be class, and it's a great achievement for the club, like to play what the best team in England for the past 7 years. So it's something that they deserve. They can generate all the money from it, and hopefully then that they can reinvest it into whether it be the training ground, certain facilities, into the team. And obviously the lads might get a few quid and bonuses off it. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. Do you know any of the lads in the dressing room still? Are you still in touch with anybody there?
No. I know Dan Happy, actually, the centre-half. I follow him on Instagram and stuff. He was a young lad coming through when I was finishing up. But I think there's been a lot of change. Like, obviously, the medical staff are still the same. Keaton is still there as the physio, and I think Melvin's still there. Ada, the kit man, is still there. He's one of the best lads you'll ever meet in your life. And obviously I know all the hierarch there, like the board and stuff, you know, like the chairman, and Martin Ling is still director of football, Lindsay's still the secretary, like they're all still there. I was only over there probably 2 years ago or 18 months ago myself, and it was great. I got to walk out onto the pitch again, and I brought the kids and stuff with me, and we got a great reception. Like, so look, it's a club. It's the club that I love from my time in the UK. Do you know what I mean? So they're the first team I kind of check for on a Saturday. Like, and now with this new Sky Sports thing where you can watch the matches, I've actually watched them there a couple of weeks ago against Stevenage. Probably wasn't the best game in the world, but it's good to be able to catch up and watch them when I have a bit of free time.
Yeah, I might nip down, actually, because if I just introduce myself as David Mooney, they might just let me in. So,
well, you know, you know them all now. You got in touch with them, didn't you? So they might invite you down as a special guest. You'll come out on the pitch waving, and they'll be like,
he's not aged well, has he? Yeah.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was me speaking to my namesake. He's an absolutely lovely man. He even did this.
Hi, I'm David Mooney. Not the David Mooney. The David Mooney from Leighton Orient. And you are listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
I have no idea when this is going to be useful, but I thought I came to do it anyway. Either of you two got any namesakes? You must be aware of other people that are either Richard Burns or Dan Burke.
Famous, there was a Richard Burns who was a world champion rally driver who, when I was in high school, famously in that world. I think it's not a world that I know a lot about, but I think he raced a Subaru Impreza, and tragically, I think died quite young. he had. It makes that thing, you know, like when people say, like, Google your own name, it's boring for me because you just get, like, he had PlayStation games named after him. Mm. So it's like that's the only hits I get. There was a Ricky Burns, who was a world champion boxer. I recall getting a tweet one night congratulating me on my world title. and in one of my former jobs in a very, very large organization, in the email global address list, there were 5 Richard Burnses. So I was Richard Burns 2, and Richard Burns 1, so the one without a number in his name, would occasionally get emails that were meant for me. And as long as they weren't sort of important work emails, he would pretend to be me for 2 or 3 emails, which was like some kind of low-key identity. So he'd lead people on to think they were talking to me. And then I think it ended when he said to somebody, you've contacted RB1. I think you wanted RB2. Please note the RB3 update is out in November and comes with Wi-Fi.
Me, what a joker. Funnier. Get him on the podcast and stuff.
Yeah. Dan, we know the thing is, in our WhatsApp group, you are a meme that you don't share a name with this person. You share a face with them. You're a basketball player in Germany.
Well, he's more of a basketball player in America. Dirk Nowitzki played in the NBA for several years. NBA legend. I think he was MVP a few times, in fact. Mm. And I live in Germany, and he's from Germany, so I get mistaken for him quite a lot. To the point where, like, I was telling you guys quite a lot when it happens so often that I don't even tell you most of the time when it's happened anymore. Like, it's just sort of like not even that interesting anymore. Like, oh yeah, someone else thought it was Dirk Nowitzki today.
I have a friend who loves basketball and knows that I don't really know anything about basketball. And at my wedding, he came over to me and said, your friend over there, you're not going to have heard of this guy, but he looks like, I was like, yeah, Dirk Nowitzki. I do know this. He's been mistaken many times.
Yeah,
it has its advantages though, because there was one time when I was in a kebab shop and I could hear the two guys behind the counter like whispering to each other, and I heard them say Dirk Nowitzki, and I was like, Dirk Nowitzki, and he was like, are you Dirk Nowitzki? And I was like, yeah, and he gave me some more. He gave me some extra kebab, so it was you know.
Yeah, with this accent for some reason. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, excellent stuff.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
Right, let's have a proper preview now. I've been speaking to Paul and Steve from the Orient Outlook Podcast. I started by getting Paul's reaction to the draw.
Oh, in my lounge, absolutely delirious. As the balls were being drawn out, lesser and lesser teams that you'd want to play were appearing on the sidebar on the BBC website. And eventually, I think it was down to Tottenham and Man City as the sort of last two Premier League sides. Tottenham then got drawn out, so my heart sunk a bit, because that would be perfect to play Tottenham either home or away, being a London club that we have a very good relationship with. And then our ball got drawn out, so I was pleased it was a home draw. And then City came out. I was absolutely delighted. Couldn't have wanted for a much better tie. The only betterment to it would have been if it was at your stadium, because of obviously a bigger crowd and therefore a bigger gate receipt for us.
Yeah. Steve, the form as well going into this. I mean, you have just lost at Stockport, but it's off the back of a really good unbeaten run. How's everybody feeling about the game?
I think everyone sees it as a game where there's no expectation, right? So if you were a bookie and you'd look at the form table, surely Orient have got to be the favourites, right? So go and put a cheeky fiver on Orient. But Yeah, I mean, everyone's looking forward to it. The form has been sensational, and since that draw has been made, all everyone's talking about is Man City coming to Brisbane Road. You know, the feeling that Pep's going to be in the dugout next to Richie Wellens, the fact that we might be seeing some big players turn out for City. It's quite a big game for City out of nothing. But the O's form has been really good coming into this one. So, really excited, really happy. And it's the FA Cup. And as you all know as City fans, and as we all know as Orient fans, absolutely anything can happen in the FA Cup if you believe. And, you know, it's not going to be an easy game for City. I think Orient, although we lost at the weekend, confidence is high. There's a great morale. It's probably the biggest one-off game that I can remember since 2011. Started in 2015, since we played Arsenal in 2011. And we just want the team to go for it. There's nothing to fear. Like, if they get beat 5-0, then they get beat 5-0. That's what everyone expects. There's no fear for us going into this game. So just enjoy the day, play their hearts out, and we'll see what happens when that all-time whistle goes on Saturday. And hopefully as an FA Cup shock to remember for the ages.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, Paul, are you hopeful of a shock given what City have been like this season? City have been they've been unpredictable, and yeah, they've taken a few teams apart, but they've been taken apart themselves a few times.
Yeah, and more recently last weekend, as pains as it may be to hear that the reminder of that result. But also, I can't help but think that some of the players will have one eye on the upcoming Real Madrid game as well. So will Pep Guardiola play the same side, you know, starting 11 that he played against Arsenal last week? I doubt it. Will there be players in there who will still be of, you know, Premier League standard and quality? Absolutely. But I do feel that there'll be a sprinkling of some talent that have, you know, an opportunity to shine and show what they can do to him and you know, for the further progression of their careers. So I think if Pep does do something like that in terms of, you know, mixing some youth with some experience, I think that we'd fancy our chances more than if he puts out the team that lost to Arsenal last week. I don't know if that's a blessing in disguise what happened last weekend, or actually if that's the fire in the belly to say, hey, come on, get that out of your system, go to these lot, tear them apart. You beat Salford
8-0. Yeah.
Yeah, like, we don't want that, obviously. No one wants that sort of a hiding. And you tore Ipswich apart as well. So, look, you can do it on your day. You can do it. There's no doubt about that. Richie's already done the sort of pre-match interview, and he's very, very, holds Pep in extremely high regard, and how he used to watch him as a young man and sort of how he used to play the game. So, you know, he's watched Pep and was very complimentary of him. So we obviously don't feel we're not arrogant enough, despite the fact that we've been in scintillating form recently, to think that actually that's going to carry forward and we're going to smash City or sort of get any kind of like outstanding result. But if we can nick a 1-0 win or go to penalties and if we lose them, like, it's just about the day, enjoying the day. You know, it's not every year that we get to welcome Premier League standard to our stadium. So we'll just enjoy the day, like Steve said. And if we can nick a result and cause a cup upset, all the better.
Yeah. What is the FA Cup fourth round to Orient, Steve? Because obviously in terms of cup progression, there's kind of like limited expectations about how far into the competition you can go. But at the same time, it's an opportunity to get into the fifth round and kind of really make some headlines.
Yeah, it's quite a big deal, just not for exposure for the club, but financially as well. I think since the board taken over, they've always expressed the importance of having a good cup run. And since we started the podcast back in 2015, I don't remember ever having a decent FA Cup run. In our National League days, we were in the qualifying stages for it and had to play two games before we even got into the first round. So it's nice to be in there, and it's a big occasion. I mean, you know, fans of a certain generation, like, you know, I'm 44, I remember the FA Cup being a massive deal. You know, the FA Cup final Saturday, all over ITV, biggest one for the entire day. Was maybe the younger generation probably don't feel the same about it. It may have lost its value, but I guess fans of our generation, especially to the board who spoke about the importance of a good cup run from a financial perspective, I think it's massive for the club. Like Paul said, would it have been better had we gone to City? Yeah, but would the odds be more against us? Definitely. So, you know, I feel like having it at Brisbane Road adds that little bit of edge to it, and to make it feel like a proper cup tie. I think if we went to City, we'd all be glad to be in the stadium, and that would be it, and we'd go home after that. But I feel, you know, 9,200 It's a small stadium. Those players, although they would have played in small stadiums as they were up and coming in their careers, because that's where they would have started before they made it to, you know, the world stage at Man City, they'll be used to that from their youth. But, you know, it's going to be a test for some of those players, but massive, massive for the club. And like you said, should we somehow beat Manchester City, somehow, then it's the fifth round of the FA Cup. And then, you know, more exposure, more finance, and more great publicity for Leighton Orient.
Can I just add to that, just to bolt onto that, two extra points. First of all, we've already got about £250,000 in prize money from getting to the fourth round. I think it's another, I just looked it up while Steve was talking, I think it's another £120,000 on top of that if we're the winners of this round. So there's a lot at stake for us as a club. It's a lot of money to us. It probably isn't so much for you guys at Man City, but for us that would mean an awful lot to us. And the second thing to keep in mind as well is we're, like Steve said, we're a 9,200 capacity stadium. Our changing rooms are small. They're coat hooks on the wall, benches. They're not luxury chairs. You haven't got loads of space. It's going to be cramped. It's not what your guys are used to. Unless some of the, you know, international players are playing abroad in smaller stadiums and smaller facilities. So it might be a bit of a culture shock to some of them that are used to kind of much larger and more hospitable surrounds.
Yeah. Who's playing well at the minute? Who should City be aware of? Who, if there is going to be an upset, who will do the damage?
Who do we reckon? I mean, Charlie Kelman works his socks off. The trouble that I've got with thinking about who's going to start the game is, number one, we've got injuries, and number two, we've got cup-tied players. So if Azeem wasn't cup-tied, I'd say probably him. I don't know, Steve, I defer to you. What do you think?
I think you've got to be looking at Jamie Donnelly to put in a big game for this one. So Spurs loanee for the season. It's his first EFL loan spell. Started off really slow, but has really found his feet in the last 2 months. He's scoring goals. He's getting world-class assists. Tottenham fans really rate him. And when we got him on loan for the season, Spurs fans were quite surprised. They expect him to go to the Championship. And it's taken him a while to bed in, but he looks like he could actually be a Premier League player. He's just been nominated for a League One Player of the Month. He plays like in the number 10. He kind of plays behind the forward, but will go into the gaps and the space. He's very creative. I think Man City might have a problem kind of trying to keep him quiet. It'll obviously be the biggest game of Jamie Donnelly's career. There'll be lots of pressure on him. But I think if there's one man who is going to unlock the City defence on Saturday, I think it will be Donnelly, who might be threading those balls through to Kelman or from set pieces, putting those balls into vital areas for our defenders to come up and attack from a set piece. So I think Donnelly is the key man for me to kind of break the barrier that is Manchester City's defence.
Yeah. Is he pacey? Pace is a problem for City at the moment.
Not really pacey. I wouldn't say pace is his strong point. I mean, we've got Dan Adji, who's been injured and has been telling everyone and their mothers that he's going to be back for the City game off the bench. I mean, if he gets on the pitch, he's very dangerous with his pace. Kelman's quite pacey. We're not really, there's no flash of pace really available to us. Ollie O'Neill was really fast, but he's injured. We're more kind of patient build up, try and find the clever final balls to get in. Not to say that we can't counter attack a team, but I wouldn't say, Paul, it's a team full of pace that will be looking to get in behind Man City, or be like trying to find the clever passes and the triangles behind the City defence, and obviously relying on Donnelly to try and find the gaps.
Yeah. We've got a charity bet coming up on the show, but we only have one gap for a prediction. So I'm going to need you two to agree on a score prediction for this now. So I'm going to let you fight it out amongst yourselves and then choose what your score prediction is going to be.
Whenever I do a rival podcast or media, I never say Orient will win. So I think Paul will be more optimistic than me. I'm thinking it'll be 3-1 City. I think best case scenario, I would say I think we'll score against City. I think we'll nick one from the set piece. Whether that's kind of early or late in the game, I don't know. But I think we've got enough about us to score, but I just don't think we're going to be able to keep City out. So for me, I would say 3-1. But if Paul wants to be more optimistic, because Paul has been optimistic before and been correct, then I'm happy for Paul to go with a more sense of optimism.
I'm going to be consistent with what I've said elsewhere. I think we'll either nick it by a goal one way or another, because, you know, it can happen, or you're going to smash us 4 or 5-0.
Yeah, so I tell you what, shall we be optimistic? Because obviously I think the two City guests that we have on Blue Moon are going to predict a City win. So shall we be optimistic and go with Paul? Shall we say a 1-0 Orient win?
Yeah, let's do that. Oh no, I don't think we'll keep a clean sheet against you. Let's go a 2-1 Orient win. Let's do that. Lump on.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Paul and Steve from Orient Outlook. Richard, how dangerous is this FA Cup tie? League One side, away from home, City struggling, Orient flying a little bit. Should win, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, all of the things that you've just said, the final thing that you've just said is why it shouldn't be nerve-wracking at all and why it should be easy, because City are obviously a better team than Leighton Orient. They're by many measures, it should be an easy game. And yet that's not how football works, is it? City are in an absolutely, to use the parlance of the day, City are in a difficult moment, and Leighton Orient are, like you say, they're doing really well.
They're in a good moment in the parlance of the day. Yeah,
we have we've seen Pep's City team lose an FA Cup game at Wigan when they were absolutely flying. So we've got, although we have
many examples.
We've seen
every City team lose an FA Cup game at Wigan. It's not special to Pep, is it?
That is very, very true, but Pep's was maybe the best one to do it. So although we obviously have a lot of successes against lower league teams, like we've had teams push us close. Was it Cheltenham who we needed to beat quite late on? There's plenty of reason, like, without even getting into the specific details of this game, there's plenty of things that you can point to and say there's reason not to be getting carried away here. And the fact that it's away from home, if it was at home, I would have zero concerns. I'd expect City to beat any lower league team at the Etihad. But going away from home, it is just different. Like, it's a different atmosphere. And they will feel that City are vulnerable, because they are. And they might not be as... technically proficient, or as sort of elitely, it's not a word, but like of elite and elite enough level to punish that in the same way that like Arsenal did, but they will have that same feeling. They'll be looking at City thinking there is an opportunity for us here today that wouldn't often be there in the way that it is in like this particular season. So I suppose that the other side of that is the rebound effect of City know that this is one of the few chances they've got of actually winning something this season, because they could win the FA Cup with, a bit of luck behind them. And they will absolutely want to bounce back from the Arsenal game. And I'm sure that they will have their own little fears within the team of, if we were to lose this one, it would be embarrassing. I mean, you're talking realistically, it's like worldwide news if City go out to a League One team. So there's plenty of motivations for just wanting to go and get it over the line and put away early. But I do think they'll win. I'm not, none of this is to tell you why I think they'll lose. But there is plenty of reasons for caution and why it won't be an easy game.
Yeah, I kind of wondered, Dan, if the team talk from Guardiola was going to be along the lines of, look at that, we've got a very difficult run coming up. Go and enjoy yourselves in this one, because you have the ability to go and enjoy yourselves in this one. Go and do it. Like, go out there and play.
Yeah, and try and get a bit of confidence back a little bit. I mean, I don't think it will do an awful lot for the grand scheme of things to win this game. You know, obviously, like Richard said, it's probably our best chance of silverware now, and it's, you want to stay in the cup as long as possible now, and therefore I don't want to see us sort of tossing off this game and playing a really weakened team and trying to rest players for the games that have got coming up, but at the same time they can't toss off the games that are coming up. You know, they've got to balance the resources as well as they possibly can. They've got to try and win some of these games in the league that they've got coming up to sort of stay in contention for top four. They've got to try and stay in the Champions League if they can, but I think that's going to be a big ask, even with Real Madrid's form not being brilliant at the moment. So I think he'll rotate a little bit for this game, but in a strong way, and with an eye on, trying to win this game, trying to get some confidence back, trying to, blood some of the new signings perhaps and give them a run.
I did wonder if we'd get all four new signings,
Yeah, I would be in favour of that, yeah. I would go with Kusunov and Rice probably as the centre-backs. Start Gonzalez, and I would definitely start Marmoush as much as possible at the moment, just to kind of get him up to speed, because he's getting there, isn't he? I didn't think he had a great game against Arsenal. I thought he was pretty impressive against Chelsea, pretty lively, and I think he's getting there and he's getting closer. There's a bit of sort of synergy being worked out among the players, so this would be a good opportunity to do that. But it's a must-win game for me. There's no two ways about it. I'll be really, really disappointed if we go out, and it will be really embarrassing. You think losing to Arsenal and Sporting and stuff has been embarrassing this season, it would be a hell of a
just another
down.
One on the list. That's all it is. Yeah. Another one on the list, yeah.
Imagine we got beat 5-1 by Leighton Orient.
Oh, don't make me clip that for next week's podcast, goodness me. Richard, there's one name that hasn't come up and has barely come up in the last few weeks that may get an opportunity in this game. Jack Grealish, as far as we can tell, has been fit, hasn't been playing. Feels very much he's in the last chance saloon if he's not already left it.
Yeah, I say fully expect, it's dependent on people being able to pay, but my expectation is that he'll probably leave in the summer. I think Pep was fascinating after the Leicester game when, like, he'd obviously held quite a lot in during the long run of not winning games, and then we put the West Ham game, wasn't it, when we won two back to back, and he did his classic "I can speak my mind now, we're winning" trick. He spent a lot of time, relatively focusing on Grealish and being very public in sort of at least hinting that Grealish isn't doing enough to get ahead of players like Savinho. So yeah, he does. I think he's past last chance saloon with Pep. I think Pep was very illustrative when he said something on the lines of, you know, I've had to fight a lot for Jack. Would suggest maybe Pep even feels a little bit personally wounded by what he's actually getting back from Grealish now. I like Grealish. I'd still love him to show his absolute best and make more of a success of his time at City. This is the kind of game that you can put him in probably relatively risk-free. He's going to have, I think it's fair to say, more talent than any of the players that he'll be directly up against, because he's an extremely talented player. So there's probably not too much risk of putting him in. He's probably not going to lose you the game, even if, you know, will he necessarily affect it? It's hard to tell with him. But I don't think it's feasible that, even in spite of all those factors where he seems to be, he sort of seems to be past last chance saloon, it's not really feasible to have him in the squad and not kicking a ball again all season. So this is a chance for him to show I can still be relied upon for whatever time I've got left. And I think with the run of fixtures that we've got coming up, if Grealish isn't in line to be playing in those, then this is another game to, it's another reason to throw him into this, just to at least rest somebody else.
Yeah. We'll get predictions shortly, but first we also have to look ahead to Real Madrid. That's on Tuesday in the Champions League. I caught up with Madrid fan Oscar Garcia to find out more about their season so far.
Well, Real Madrid has been playing good, not excellent, but we've been winning most of the matches. And in Champions League, even when we started quite bad, it's not a surprise that we start bad in Champions. So we've never been really scared of not classifying for the playoffs. We did think that we would be in the top eight, but well, I suppose nobody really knew how this new format would end up being for the players and the coaches. So once we saw we were in the middle of the table, and at the end of the day, what you want is to classify. From the fans' perspective, we've never been super worried of not being in the top eight. It's just, even if you are a fan, it's just like one match, well, two matches extra maybe, so why not?
Yeah, and when you look at the La Liga table, I mean, 1 point ahead of Atletico Madrid. Is that title race, are you feeling the pressure of that title race this season, given that it's the Madrid rivals as well?
Yeah, well, Atletico, once again, is a super hard team. They had a stroke of, I think it was 13 matches in a row winning. They've been top of the league until 2 or 3 weeks ago. Simeone is doing an excellent job one more year. He's one of the most paid coaches in the world. And now we just lost again Espanyol, which we could affect our performance in the next days. Espanyol is pretty much on the bottom, fourth from the bottom. It's a competitive league between Real, Atletico, Barcelona is starting to give pressure again, even when they've had a lot of criticisms in the last couple of months, but they're always there. So
yeah. Does having this playoff game affect that title race, do you think? Because you could have had a week off here, and instead now you've got two games against, okay, City are not performing particularly well at the minute, but you've got two games against another team that you might not have had to have.
I know. This is the eternal debate with footballers. It seems I actually only know one professional footballer. He's about to retire now. And he does say that playing two or three matches extra in a month is a factor to take into account. But then I know a lot of basketball players who play every two or three days, and they say that footballers complain too much about that. So not sure if just a couple of matches more can really make the difference. I've never been a believer of that, and they have 22 players, so the team should bear that in mind. So for me, that's never been an excuse, let's say.
Yeah, how's confidence at the moment? Because as I say, top of the Liga, and you look at City. I mean, we've met so many times in the Champions League, and Real always seem to beat City in like one or two times aside. That Real always have a good chance against City, but this year City are not what they were, and City are really struggling. Does that? I mean, are you going in with more confidence than ever?
We are confident, but we play against Guardiola. It's not Manchester City. Our fear is Guardiola, because that guy for 3 or 4 years literally played with us. And we still remember that no matter who we put on the pitch or in the bench, he just literally played with us like puppets. So it's like, yeah, of course, this year Manchester City is super weak. Well, not super weak, but it's the weakest it's been in the last 10 years. But at the same time, they have Haaland on the front, Guardiola in the bench, and you can expect anything. So we go with respect for sure.
Yeah. What sort of a team are you expecting? It's you've been talking before about Luka Modric getting older. How much of an influence is he having this season?
Well, this year, Ancelotti is not playing with him that much, just a few minutes at the end of every match. And to be honest, he's been playing quite well until, I would say, the last 4 or 5 matches where it's just like, I don't know his statistics, but I'm sure that the pass accuracy is above 90% in all his career. And in the last matches, he's lost a few critical balls. Actually, against Espanyol, he didn't go to the pressure very well, and then he didn't go back, and that's how Espanyol scored. So he's not playing that much. However, Valverde, Bellingham, the midfielders are playing super well. The only player I personally wouldn't, I don't like, is Tchouaméni. He hasn't performed at all since he started. However, Ancelotti has completely trust on him. He's playing in every position, midfielder, centre-back. Since the very beginning, he's never in the bench. He's the only player I don't really see he shouldn't be in the top 11 of a Real Madrid squad.
Yeah. When you think of Real Madrid as well, the summer just gone, the big story was Kylian Mbappe arriving. Mm. How's he doing? He's a player that City have had one or two troubles with in the past, but also they've had players that have kept him quiet. So how's he doing?
Well, Mbappe, I would say that including me, I'm going to be a bit unfair, including me until 5 weeks ago. So we are almost in February. So until middle of December, for 2 or 3 months, we couldn't believe how bad he was playing or how irrelevant to the games he was being. Like, literally, no signs of a good player. He could be like any player. However, in the last 5-6 weeks, he seems to be the one who we saw in PSG and with the France national team, and so far I think he's already scored like 14 goals, a lot of them in the last month. So it seems that he got the confidence, and something that a lot of people say is like players have to adapt to the new teams, and it seems that in his case he did need that period of adaptation.
Yeah, we're recording this before the Copa del Rey game on Wednesday evening. You've also got the derby at the weekend. Does that affect this game?
Probably does. Actually, we are playing against Leganés. Leganés is a little city from Madrid, so officially it's also a derby.
but that's my Spanish geography not being good enough, though.
Leganés people will be angry if you say, oh, this is a derby as well. So I suppose that yes, it does affect, and you will try to play with, let's say, at 95% effort, just making sure that with that 5% that you save, you are saving it for Atletico, trying to win Leganés with 95% of the effort, because of course we have to pass. Real Madrid can't afford losing against Leganés in the Copa del Rey. I think we are going to play with a couple of center backs that don't usually play. Raúl Asensio, a super young player, and Jacobo Ramón, who has played only like 10 minutes so far. So answering to your previous question, we are definitely not playing with the top squad. In terms of players that we are reserving for Manchester City and Atletico, players that are playing really well lately, Courtois, he's saving absolutely every difficult shot from their rivals for the last 2 years. He's an amazing goalkeeper. Arda Güler is playing super well this year as well, although he's not playing that many minutes. Vinicius, as you know, he's the star of Real. Like he right now is better than Mbappé. So I would say if you have to watch out with the players, definitely Vinicius. And surprisingly as well, Rodrigo keeps performing very
name,
well.
That name still gives me horrors. the two goals in the Bernabeu a couple of years ago, honestly, still keeps me up at night.
Yeah. Rodrigo is an interesting player because nobody would say he's a star, but his statistics are there. He keeps playing minutes. He plays. He keeps scoring goals, giving assists, non-stopping running. So it's a player that is probably undervalued. He's there.
Yeah. And whereabouts are Real Madrid struggling at the minute? Where are you weakest right now? Where could City get at you?
I shouldn't say this as a Real Madrid fan, but I'm going to say even less when I'm Manchester-based. I would say Tchouaméni, our centre-back. He's a midfielder, so he goes to the ball as a defender without thinking he's the last player in the field in that moment. So far he's had mistakes that you would think that they're from an amateur player. And then I suppose Lucas Vázquez, he always performs, but he's kind of, let's say, old for being a football player, or he's getting old, let's say, so he's not as fast as he used to. I would say those are the main two weaknesses of Real right now, with two defenders.
It kills me when you say Lucas Vázquez is old at 33, knowing that I'm 37 and I'm still trying desperately to play when I can. Oscar, let's have a score prediction. We got a charity bet on the show a bit later on. Let's have a score prediction for this first leg. What are you going to go for?
I'm going to go for a lot of goals, as usual, between these two teams. And I'm going to say 3-4 Real, 2-4 Manchester City.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
That was Oscar Garcia, Real Madrid fan. Dan, when City are good, Real Madrid can be an absolute nightmare. How about this version of City? How could they be taken apart by Madrid?
Comprehensively, I'd imagine. Yeah, I mean, like I was saying a minute ago, Real Madrid aren't in fine fettle themselves at the moment. They've not been playing well. There's been a bit of talk about Ancelotti's future, and there's been a bit of infighting in the camp even, but you'd still expect them to come into this game as pretty heavy favourites. You know, normally I do fancy us against Real Madrid, and obviously we got the better of them a couple of years ago and were unlucky to get knocked out by them last year. But you just think, I mean, when the draw was made, my initial reaction was, oh, we're at home first. That gives us a chance to sort of get a good result, take a good result to the Bernabeu and see what we can do there. The opposite of that is, what if we don't get a good result at home? What if we get beaten at home? If we go into the game one or two goals down or even more, we've got no chance, have we, of coming back, I don't think. And even if we go into it with a slight advantage, you know, the way that things happen in the Bernabeu on Champions League nights, it could be very, very messy. And I'm not looking forward to it. I almost wanted to just like forfeit the game when I saw that we got them. I just thought, what's the point? Like, it's just going to be a bloodbath. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to knock our confidence even more. Maybe it would have been better if we'd gone out against Bruges and not had to bother with this. But who knows? Maybe that's just a real glass half empty way of looking at things, given that this is, you know, the form that we've been in recently and the way the season's gone. Maybe we can do something here. Maybe we can get a draw in both legs and beat them on penalties or something like that. I'd bite your hand off for that right now, but I'm not feeling good about it whatsoever, unfortunately.
Yeah. Richard, the thing with, like as Dan was speaking there, like the other part of this is Madrid are obviously in the playoff themselves. They didn't get into the top eight, so that is a factor in this. But at the same time, when it comes to kind of how City have been managing games recently, like it just feels like they'll have nothing to stop Madrid just running straight through the middle of them.
Yeah, I think that's the concern. I think I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in Madrid's form, in Madrid's form this season. I think clearly the fact that they are in the playoff will be way, way below their expectations for the Champions League this season. But we can't rely on that being an indicator that they're going to come to us and be below par or not be an exceptional opponent, because they've got exceptional players. And yeah,
I think, you know, what it reminds me of, actually, weirdly? Do you remember when we first qualified for the knockout phase and got Barcelona a couple of times? It feels like that sort of disparity in the two teams right now, where City might win because they've got good players, but the other team are really, really good.
Yeah, it's not an unfair comparison, I don't think. I mean, I don't know if there's another team in the world, other than for City specifically, like going to Anfield, I don't know if there's another team in the world that you'd ever want to play when you're in bad form, like, especially in this competition. It's sort of their competition, isn't it? It's sort of presume they win it until told otherwise. It's a bit of a nightmare game, really. And I absolutely have sympathy with all of the points that many people have made of, like, almost what was the point of beating Bruges to have to play this game. And even if we get past this one, like, we have another very difficult tie, and it feels like we're not going to win it. But you can't.
Got to try, haven't you? Yeah,
you can't approach supporting a football team quite like that, can you? You sort of have to want them to win, and we've at least staved off the embarrassment of not even making the playoff. But I just think if it goes as badly as it has potential to, it could be very, very bruising, and the risk of having to play this game might outweigh the potential benefits of being involved in it. But again, that's been very down on it. City still have an excellent squad. The players that they've been able to register will be slightly more bedded in by then. Maybe Marmoush will have already scored his first goal and be able to play in this game and pull it out of the bag for us. You know, we have seen some decent performances recently as well, so maybe they raise the game for this one and at least take something to the Bernabeu that keeps them in the tie.
Imagine he plays Nunes at right back against Vinny Jr. there. Bloody hell. I mean, I actually, just on Nunes, I think it's been a little bit unfair, the criticism of him. I think he's done okay. You know, he's done about as well as could be expected for a midfielder playing at right back. You know, committed himself a little bit too much at times, but surely he's got to be taken out of the firing line for a game like that. It's just suicide otherwise.
There's another element to this game as well. Dan, you're obviously in Germany, so like it doesn't affect you so much. But Richard, I don't know if you're in the Cups games this year, but for everybody that is, we all assumed City would be in the top eight when this new format was announced. And now they're not. Suddenly there's another 37 to 72 quid to pay out of nowhere.
Yeah, I am another one where I cash in my top fan points these days. I'm not on the cup scheme for either the League Cup or the Champions League. I stay on it for the FA Cup, and I did what I think you did last year, Mooney, of signing back up to it in the hope that I could go to Wembley if we got to the final of the Champions League. Yeah, it's... I mean, it is an inconvenience, isn't it? That's and I hate that I sort of see things like that now. But an extra home game midweek for extra money is just not something that I can justify.
And it's really short notice, actually, when you consider how soon it is after the end of the group.
Yeah, and then for me, which will be a situation is a negative word, but like a position that a lot of people are in, like have a family, like an extra game that in the evening, like is. Coming home from work and having about 15 minutes with my son and then having to be back out of the house again. Like it doesn't allow a whole lot of balance in family life. So I will instead opt for the stay at home position of being able to spend the evening with my son and then sort of dejectedly and watching the TV, perhaps from behind the sofa for large parts of it.
You could turn it off, can't you, when it gets too bad.
I wouldn't do that. I haven't quite cashed in my fan points to that level yet, but we'll see.
The club should just make the tickets free, shouldn't they, for this game? It's a sorry.
Nice.
Imagine the precedent that would set. Sorry.
Yeah. Didn't mean to be in this game. Here you go, I have a free ticket, yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, it's charity bat time. We're on £815 for the season so far. William Hill is giving us three £10 correct score singles. The winnings are going to the Man City fans food bank support group. And we've got Leighton Orient and Real Madrid to predict. We heard that Paul and Steve for Leighton Orient settled on a 2-1 Orient win with their optimistic hats on. That's 50-1 and £500 if they're right. Dan, what are you having for this?
At this moment in time, their prediction seems more realistic than mine, to be honest. But 3-0 City.
3-0 City is 5-1. The bookies think it's realistic. 50 quid if you're right. Burns, what are you having?
I'm going for Leighton Orient giving themselves that... feeding into the narrative and giving City a little bit of a scare, but City running out as 3-1 winners.
That's 11-1 and £110 if you are right. Now it's time for the bloodbath in the Bernabeu. Oscar, we heard, went for a 3-2. Oh, it's not in the Bernabeu, is it?
No, we're home, yeah.
It's at the Etihad first, but still, bloodbath. Bloodbath's all round, anyway.
Have you got any alliteration for that one?
Evisceration at the Etihad.
Hey, very good.
Nice.
Yeah, Oscar's gone for a 3-2 Real Madrid win. That's 20-1 and £200 if he's right. Dan, give us the mildly optimistic news.
Yeah, 2-2 I'll take on that one.
2-2 is 10-1 and £100. Richard, give us the really optimistic news, actually.
The glimpse behind the curtain here is that I also wanted 2-2 and I couldn't bring myself to predict City to lose. So I'm going for City to win 3-2.
Yeah, not happening. But 18-1 if it does, and you never know. Like stranger things have happened.
Is that the first set of three predictions that could be laid out as a palindrome?
Possibly. I mean, I don't keep that sort of record on the podcast, to be honest. I wasn't expecting that question, so I haven't looked into it. But I'm sure somebody must know out there. So we'll
check
with
Adam Carter.
Yeah, we'll get Adam onto the case. I can't remember if I said this now, but 18-1, £180 if you're right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and for information on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. It's time for the listeners' questions, which means it's time for one of these. Dan, give us a number 1, 2, or 3?
3.
Number 3.
Have you got a theory on City that needs closer inspection, or just something to ask us? Because this is your section. Read something odd into Pep's tone or inflection, or a novel idea to improve team selection. Sick of these jingles? Well, give it a mention, or maybe something worthwhile to bring to our attention. Let us know, Blues, because it's your listeners' questions. Oh, yes, it really is.
It really is indeed. Blue Sky is the way to get in touch. Just search for Blue Moon Podcast. You can email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com, or you can fill in the form on the website as well. Matt's been in touch on the emails to say, could it be fair to say that City haven't addressed the issues they needed to address if they were going to seriously fight for fourth this season? Kucinov and Reich are clearly ones for the future. Marmoush looks lively so far, but his role and position wasn't top of our requirements, and only adding Gonzalez to midfield seems like it could be quite light. What happens if we don't finish in the top four this season? Dan, if City, we've kind of skirted around this, if City don't finish in the Champions League places, I think it probably will go down to fifth, which gives City a little bit more leeway. But is there an argument that they should have done more in the last month to secure that place?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they could have done a lot more. I think it's notoriously hard to sign players in January, and getting four players in or five if you include that lad who's been sent out on loan. I think they've done pretty well. You know, they spent a lot of money. I take the points made about the two defenders, Kuznov and Rice, that were bought in. I wonder if that's, you know, a view to the summer. Maybe one of the current centre-backs will be moved on in the summer, and it's about just sort of like starting that procession now, starting that takeover sort of period where one of them sort of learns as an understudy. And then Kuznov is, you know, the one who's sort of seen as ahead in the pecking order, and then he'll, I don't know, if maybe Stones leaves in the summer or something like that, or Akanji, I don't know. They're ready to take the place, or Ake perhaps. I think Marmoush was a really required signing, especially after Alvarez left in the summer. I don't think that position was replaced at all. I think they sort of tried. They had to think about it late in the window, decided it wasn't worth it, thought maybe Gundogan can sort of do that attacking position. Obviously, that's not worked out. So I think Marmoush will be a really important signing, and someone who could fire us to hopefully a top four finish and maybe a trophy this season. And the Gonzalez one, I don't know an awful lot about him apart from what I've kind of read about him in recent days, and sounds like he won't be the carbon copy for Rodri, but will be someone who can at least play that role a bit better than Kovacic and Gundogan, and be able to play alongside Rodri in future. So I think it's about as they've done about as well as you could expect. Maybe a fullback, bringing in someone to replace Walker would have been ideal. They've obviously had a look at that Cambiasso from Juventus, and will probably have to wait until the summer to sign. Well, they will have to wait until at least the summer to sign him now. So I'm pretty pleased with the transfer business, but I could also see it not having a huge, huge impact on the way that the form of the team, because it's just, you know, it takes a long time to bed players in any team, in any system, and especially with Guardiola's. It's just a lot to ask for them to really have a transformative impact. But we'll see. I think, you know, they've tried. They could have easily not signed anyone, which was what I was kind of expecting going into the window, that they just go, oh, it's not worth it, we'll wait until the summer and we'll just sort of write the season off. So I like the fact they've had a go and brought some players in.
Yeah. Yeah, Richard, this reminds me in a weird way of what a lot of people would consider the worst ever City season in our lifetimes, 06-07, because it was so pertinently obvious they needed a striker in that winter window. They went for Mido on the final day of the window and didn't get him. And then it was like mid-February when Emil Mpenza signed on a free. And I just remember the utter dejection of the end of that window going, oh, okay, well, this is it then. We're never going to score again. That's how it's going to play out. And I kind of get that same sense on a grander scale from Matt's email there. But the big one, I think, is I don't know a lot about him, like Dan. I'm not expecting you to know him inside out. But the fact that they've got Gonzalez in as a midfielder when they clearly need someone just to be more secure in the centre of the pitch.
Yeah. Again, no. Almost nothing about him other than little bits I've been able to read since the signing. But that does feel like they have at least tried to address some of the problems. I think that, again, it's like it's about balance and what is it that you want. So we in the position that City are in, it's very tempting to say, and I think it's right to say, you have to try and fix this where possible. And the quicker you can fix this, then the more we can limit the potential long-term damage of how bad this season could be. Missing out on the Champions League would be disastrous for City as a club. It does restrict or reduce your chance of being able to sign top players. Obviously, it's important financially. So it's good to be able to make signings that you think can have enough of an impact to like mitigate that risk for the rest of the season. But you also can't just go spending the kind of money that City need to spend to seriously make the impact that they want to make. You can't just spend that frivolously and sign it on short-term fixes, because then you push the problem onto the other side. And okay, it might be enough to get you over the line this season, but then you're stuck with players on high wages that you've paid big fees for that don't have a long-term future, and you're stuck in that position that we used to be in after the sort of glut of post-takeover business to accelerate our progress, where you're stuck with players that you don't want and can't get rid of. So there's always, I know it's the boring answer, isn't it? Because we'd all love to just be able to go and sign our way out of this problem and sign our way into winning the Champions League, FA Cup and securing top four and making something decent out of the season. It's not that simple. So you would think that the players that City have signed have been players that have been identified quite some time ago, that they always had as potential targets, and they've just had to accelerate the pace of. And I'm content with that. I don't think it's a magic wand that's suddenly going to push us on one of these mad end of season runs, but I do think they seem like good sort of incremental improvements, and Marmoush is the one that is most exciting to me, but maybe that's just because he's an attacking player and that's the most exciting kind of player. But I am glad of the Gonzalez signing. I am glad that we've at least tried to address that position, and the fact that he's not a Rodri carbon copy obviously gives him more of a long-term future, and yeah, makes it a sensible signing, I think.
Yeah. Final question for this week's show comes from Luke on Blue Sky, who says, if you could sign one pre-Guardiola player to help sort this season's problems out, who would it be?
Emilien Panzer.
Yes, great player. Great player. Loved him at City. Don't know why they got rid of him.
For short-term impact and then never to be seen again, Daniel van Buyten loan.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd do the business, wouldn't he? Absolutely. Right, if you've got any suggestions, because I thought about this question, and my first thought was like, they'd need someone like Fernandinho. Oh, he was a Guardiola-era player. Oh, they need someone like Yaya Toure. He was a Guardiola-era player. There's nobody like I can't think of the centre midfielder that played in a good City team that was not Guardiola. De Jong, maybe?
Yeah, and I was actually going to say a minute ago, that was the last time we did like this many signings in January, wasn't it? We signed De Jong, Bridge, Given, and Bellamy. So yeah. I hope that these signings fare better than some of those did. Let's just put it that way.
They all had fairly good City careers. I mean, Bellamy's was
Wayne
quite
Bridge
short.
Wayne Bridge.
All right. Yeah, fine. All right. 3 out of 4 is not bad, is it?
He had one good afternoon in a City shirt.
He did indeed, yeah. Right, that's it for this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thanks to my guests for this one, Dan Burke.
Thanks, everyone. Stay humble out there.
And Richard Burns.
Thank you very much.
This week's Nostalgia Show took in some happier times as we remember the good and bad against Aston Villa. I was joined by City fan Adam Monk and Villa fan Frankie Maguire in City Heaven, City Hell. There's a clip of that coming up shortly. The full thing is available from patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. I'll be back next week after the games with Leighton Orient and the bloodbath against Real Madrid. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Do you know, I remember coming on the preview show with you a few days before this game, and I remember everybody on it being very, very nervous as City fans. And I was sitting there thinking, have you all forgotten what you do to Aston Villa all the time? And then when Coutinho scored, I thought, wow, okay, this really might actually be on. But there was still a lingering part of me that was like, if City just get one quickly, they're going to come back and it's going to be, let's face it, 3-2. And then they did.
When Coutinho did score, I think everyone gave up. And I was working that day. Like, I was presenting from within the south stand that day. I wasn't allowed to leave my station with work. But when Coutinho scored that, I kind of saw my arse and thought, well, do you know what? We've lost. I'm going to go sit next to my dad, who obviously, like, when I've been working at City, I wasn't sitting with him. So I had my season ticket slot, and it was the same seat that I was in for, like, Aguero against QPR. So I thought, if we are going to do this, it was like a superstitious thing. It was like, I need to move. And yeah, as soon as I parked my bum down, Gundogan headed one in. So, like, I'm taking credit for the win, basically, is what I'm saying. Like, I sat down, we hit 3 goals in quick succession. I got up, dusted my shoulders off and went back to work.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.